Hello and welcome to the final episode of the Animation Industry Podcast. I'm feeling so many things right now. It's hard to put into words, but it's a mixture of sadness, a little bit of regret for ending this, a little bit of relief for ending this, like a sense of completeness. I'm a little bit excited. Whole bunch of other things, I suppose. So basically, I've decided it's time for me to devote myself to other projects and also just to have a little bit of extra free time during the week. If you've been listening, you know I started this podcast on a whim back in 2018 when I quit my job in business and decided to get into the animation industry. I went to the Taffy Animation Conference in Toronto and had no idea about anything in this industry. And I had no connections and I didn't even have any animation to show. But my old boss, I was texting him in the conference and he suggested I go up to the keynote speaker and ask him to be on my podcast. Of course, I didn't have a podcast, but he said it was a great way of learning more and making good connections. So I did. And that keynote speaker was none other than the amazing Fred Seibert, who instantly agreed to be on my podcast. So then I had to scramble and figure out how to do this. And ever since, I've been running it every single week. It just hasn't stopped. And I've chatted with so many of my personal animation heroes. It's been incredible, as well as everybody from aspiring animators, hobbyists, pros, studio owners, and more from around the world. You know, I've probably 24 countries. Japan, Canada, obviously, US, Brazil, Spain, Mexico, France, Italy, the UK, Australia, Morocco, South Africa, and more and more and more. This podcast has really been life-changing and career-changing for me. It's gotten me some really super cool work. I know other people have gotten work too from it, which is amazing. I've made some great connections, some great friends. And kind of the weirdest part is when I go to some of these conferences or schools or studios, people already know who I am because of this. Somebody will be like, hey, your voice sounds familiar. Wait a minute. I'm like, yeah, I'm that guy that runs that podcast. But overall, you know, this podcast, I feel like it's had a really good run, especially hitting 250 episodes. I feel super proud and accomplished for that. I'm getting emotional again. And I'm just so grateful to everyone who's tuned in over the years. You know, this has been such a journey. And I really can't believe how many people listen to this. Every month it gets about 10,000 listens. And, you know, I tallied up all the listens over its lifetime recently. It's hit well over 500,000, which is incredible. I never dreamed of starting something like this and continuing it for so long. So thank you so much to everybody who's tuned in over the years. Thank you for following this journey with me. I really hope that you've gotten something out of it. And, you know, it's been a time. One final note is that I may be publishing future episodes because there are still people I'm trying to get a hold of that I'd love to chat to, but I'm not making any promises. So this is the final episode of this podcast. Now, on to this week's episode. Today I'm chatting with Pedro Medeiros, a pixel artist and video game art director known for such titles as Celeste, Towerfall, and his current unreleased projects called Earthblade and Neverway. In our chat, Pedro shares how he got into pixel art in Brazil when video game development was absolutely non-existent there, as well as his process for developing a video game's art style from scratch. He's also going to share everything you wanted to know and learn about becoming a professional pixel artist. So without further ado, let's jump in. Hello, Pedro. How's it going?
Hello. I'm going well. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for coming on the chat. Big fan of Celeste. It's very, very hard as well. But the thing that stood out to me instantly when I first started playing it is the pixel art is just super fantastic and fun and like cute, and it all works. So I want to talk all about pixel art.
Thank you.
Today, you're probably... your whole life revolves around pixel art at this point.
Yeah. It didn't start like that, but yeah.
So tell me, how do you get into pixel art specifically? Because you can't like go to school and study pixel art.
No. I don't think even some people, I've seen some like pixel art courses and stuff like that, and think like people getting inchward from the Pixar perspective. I think while that's like a valid approach, I would not recommend seeing like that. I my background is actually from like just like graphic design and actually sculpture. I studied a lot of like physical sculptures.
Does that ever, okay, so because like my thinking was you need like a strong like color theory and graphic design totally makes sense because you're like really trying to highlight and not highlight different things with pixel art. Like it's a totally different approach than like illustration in a lot of the cases. But do you ever, when you're, you said your background's in sculpture, does that ever play come to like play and when you're
I
creating
think
pixel
so.
art when you
I think so. Because like again, like for sculpture, you need also to learn, you also need to learn like the basics and fundamentals, like anatomy and everything. So I think it, and that also like comes into play with pixel art and like the simplifying shapes and everything. And things trying to see things like in 3D like before, so things like that really I think really help. So because I feel the pixel art is just like a medium, like watercolor or sculpture or whatever. So
So then how did you get into pixel art from graphic design? Because like that doesn't seem like a very clear
no, I mean I always dabbled into like pixel art since I was a kid. I actually started. When I was very young, I was doing like SimCity 2000 mods.
Love it.
Yeah, that's the thing that I really liked. I also had like this programming language that I learned in school called Mega Logo, which was in Portuguese and it was very weird, but it had like a sprite editor like integrated to it. And that's how I started animating when I was a kid. But then I almost like forgot about it. Like I still like there was like a long time that I just didn't do any pixel art. But later, after college, actually, I wanted to make a game and I was using Construct and I wanted something very simple. And I was like, oh, I know how to do some pixel art. I did a little bit for as a hobby, so I started like studying more. You know, like I don't know. I think I can use my to translate my art style into pixel art, and from that I kind of like snowballed, and I started studying like by myself. But I always use like a lot of fundamentals from like traditional drawing, sculpture, or whatever into that.
So it kind of came about as like a necessity for you to execute this game idea you had, rather than like, I'm a graphic designer and I see pixel art and I would love a career in that. So what happened
No.
with this first game? Like obviously, which game is this?
Oh, it's called 6 Feet Over or something. It's like a zombie shooter. Like it's just like a very simple like 1 week game that I did with Amora. She also worked on Celeste, she's the character designer.
Wow.
And back then we did games together, Mini Boss. We did also another game called Talbot's Odyssey, and eventually we did Out There Somewhere, which is another platformer. But the thing is like I remember we sat down and like asked ourselves, okay, what's the simplest thing we can do to make like a basic game? That was back in 2009, 2010. And we were like, okay, maybe pixel art, called pixel art. It's very simple. There's like not many colors. You can tiling things in pixel art is very easy, which is great. So you can get away with like just like a black square a few dots and that's ground now, right? Things like that. So it came out of that. Came out of like, okay, what's the simplest thing? Because we were like just two people. I didn't really know how to program. We had to do art and programming. So it came from that. And I also like personally I always liked pixel art. I always saw pixel art games. I thought they were cool and everything.
So why did you aim to make a game in the first place? Like, were you working full time and you're like, this would be a cool hobby? Or like, were you like,
No,
really want to get into gaming with?
I really wanted to get into gaming. I started, so I'm from Brazil, right, originally. Now I live in Vancouver, but back in Brazil, especially in 2009, there was like no games company, like no game company there. Like there was nothing. And I don't know. I don't even think I wanted to be like an indie or anything. I just wanted to work with games like in general. And since there was like nowhere I could like apply it for a job or something. I was like, oh no, I think I have to make my own, I guess. And I started making like I wanted to make something basically. And I thought like, well, I cannot do like a triple A MMORPG or something. I need to do like the simplest thing I can possibly do first, and then I can scale up from there. And that's how I started. Like, okay, so me and Amora, we went to randomly actually to a workshop about Construct, which is like Game Maker but simpler even like back then. And they're like, oh, this is something we can do. And from there we started this game, and then we did a second one which was like a slightly longer one. And we there was like no one was making games back in, especially back in Brazil back then. So we actually won a bunch of awards with that
Oh
game.
wow. From where? Like you publish these games on like
I don't think we published it like on like there was not we couldn't get on Steam or something like that back then. But we did publish it on the Desura, which was like a popular modding and website and thing for India. It was like way before itch.io.
wow.
And we got some awards from like I don't know, I think Brazilian government and like were like trying to like get more people to make games and stuff, and we just submitted our game and they started winning them, and we're like, oh, that's good. And that kind of moved us forward until we managed to get to do Out There Somewhere.
Wow. Okay. So you must have like a pretty self-starting mentality to just be like, you know what? This doesn't even exist in my whole country. I'm just gonna make this. And then you won some awards. And then the Brazilian government was like, we need more game industry here. There's money there. So like let's toss some awards to
I mean, I think some were like private too. I mean, I don't know. It was just like a bunch of like I remember there was like we won a like game music festival. We also won for that because the music on that game was really good.
So you must have been feeling like pretty good at the time. Like you just made this thing yourselves and then you start winning some awards, getting some attention.
Yeah, it was really good. It was really good. It was a cool time that was happening there. There was like a lot of like we saw a bunch of like small companies starting to show up in Brazil. A few of them are still here. Like there's a company called Joy Master. They're great. They do like very retro games. They're from back then. They also were in the same style of a like oh, we want to make games. There's not like a large industry here. Let's just do something. That was like the mentality back then.
Cool. So how did you end up working on Out There Somewhere? Like you did you apply? Did you like
No, Out There Somewhere was no, we also made it. Like it was
you
just like
also
me and Amora.
you've just made all the games you've ever so you also have like a background in like coding and like stuff too. That really helps.
A little
How
bit.
I because one of my questions was like how much coding knowledge do you need to execute your pixel art style, because like pixel art especially is so integrated into the design of the game in terms of like I don't know, it has to be like pixel perfect when a character lands, especially in Celeste where like people are holding on to like well literally the pixels.
I think in general you don't need not like any knowledge in coding anything if you want to do pixel art. But the more you have, I think the more useful you can be for the whole team and everything. Because back then, like the thing that happened, like for me, I went to like technical school and I learned programming. I wasn't good, but I knew something. And that helped me a lot. Like those games, like Out There Somewhere, Talbots Odyssey, like all those old games, I coded them using like Game Maker things, like very simple things. But I don't know. I think it helps to know how the game works because you can come up with creative solutions for problems like parallaxing on how you blend tiles, how do they like for example, if you want to do a character that changes hats, for example, do you need to draw every like all the positions again? Don't like you can you just place the hat on top? Can you place an anchor? how programmatically you can use solve things. So things like that, I think it helps if you have some coding knowledge.
So like on a daily, like you're working on two new games now, like on a daily basis, like how much are you jumping into the actual coding versus like just going to town drawing pixel art?
On Earthblade, I don't code a lot. I code a little bit sometimes, especially like when there's like some small thing that I need to do, like for editor stuff. But for Neverway, the side project, working with Isa, I'm actually coding a lot. I code like daily, like
Wow.
it's I would say almost like 50-50.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So like, well, that leads me to like ask like how big of a team is working on like Neverway or like Earthblade?
Yeah, Earthblade is a little bigger. There's like seven, I think.
Okay, that's still
Eight.
pretty intimate. Like
And Neverway is just five.
how many were on in comparison? Well, what's the biggest game you've ever worked on, I guess?
I think still probably Neverway, not or Celeste. Like, I mean, if you count, it kind of depends. Like the teams are kind of hard to say, like, oh, there's five people, seven people, nine people, because there's like a bunch of like contractors too. There's some people that do like just one job and they leave. There's some people they work on the game every day. So it's, I don't know what counts.
Like 5 to 7 core people.
Yeah, I would say like five to seven core people in general is the size of the team. Like all the games have been like this for a while.
Is that typical to other games of like indie studio games of your size, do you think? Because that seems like very small to me.
I think so. I think so.
Okay.
Think
I mean,
that that's typical. I mean, some games are bigger, like more like triple Y games or something, I recall. It's like they have like 30 people, 40 people, but usually no more than that.
Got you. So, okay. So, you have a ton of experience specifically in pixel art and coding pixel art for games. Is it like, is this your thing? Are you ever going to try like a different type of style game, or do you only see like pixel art? Because you mentioned it came out of necessity kind of at the beginning, but you know, you're super developed in it now. I've even read like your how to be consistent in like your art style and stuff. So you're like creating rules and like perfecting what you do versus like, do you know what I mean?
I know. Okay. Yeah, originally I wanted to be like concept artist, like with digital art and stuff like that, do art like stuff like Magic the Gathering and I don't know, Blizzard stuff.
Oh,
But that was like what I always wanted. I'm kind of glad I didn't went that direction. I kind of like more the thing that I do now. But I also like, okay, the thing, like I love to explore random stuff. For example, we did Celeste 64, which was like a 3D version of Celeste recently. It was just like a game jam thing, and I did all the 3D art, and it was fun, very like very low poly 3D stuff and stuff like that. The team we were working on Earthblade, we worked on a prototype, which was like a cel shaded 2D game, kind of painterly style, and I was also doing it. But in the end, honestly, I feel that I kind of, in the future, I see myself doing more pixel art. I kind of like it. I think that's what I'm more
I mean, from
consistently
like an
good
outside
at.
perspective, like pixel art has such a unique look, and it's also like you can tell when somebody is doing pixel art, but it's not good, I guess. There's a lot of games where like it just looks like they slapped, like they didn't create like rules of consistency or something, and like it looks like they just slapped a bunch of like other like random
Squares.
objects, assets they found together, and it, like so like you know there's like especially Celeste, and you know I've seen the previews of your other games, there's like such a cohesive like style that has been like perfected and figured out. So like do you want to talk to creating
Sure.
that and how, because that's
Yeah.
different than like an illustrative design as
I
well.
think what I like to think pixel art as like something like well, pixel art is a mosaic, right? It's just like it's like a grid. You have a grid, you have squares, you place the mosaic there, right? People have been doing that since, I don't know, ancient times.
Ancient, yeah,
Yeah. I was gonna say
Romans,
Middle Ages,
whatever.
like no, Middle Ages like way before
Yeah.
the being people been doing that since ever. And but the thing is, like, that's a limitation that we like an arbitrary limitation we have, and it should keep the style consistent. And during like I don't know, like video games history, like pixel art was always like a bad, almost like a bad limitation from most developers. People kind of didn't like pixel art when we were doing it. So imagine like in the Super Nintendo, people were like almost like fighting against the pixel art. They were doing pixel art, but were like, I don't want to do that. I want circle. I don't want to do a square.
Yeah.
So they developed techniques to make the squares look as round as they could, basically, right? And I feel that's like, especially when people do like retro stuff, I feel that that's where they miss the most. Like, what game do you like? They remember like, oh, pixel art, kind of squarey, right? So I just put a bunch of squares and make this as square as possible, and it will look good, right? It usually don't, because that's not how people usually did it. People were, when you have a limitation like that, like even if it's arbitrary, like we did in Celeste, like we had a resolution of 320 by 180, I think. It's very small, and it's like when I'm drawing, I'm always trying to fight the resolution as much as I can. I'm like, okay, I have this resolution. I need to make this look as round as I possibly can. So I'm fighting against it. The other game I'm working on, Neverway, we have a very, very limited color palette. We have like eight. I actually have two secret colors now, but it's kind of mostly eight colors, and that's it. And the way I'm doing it, I'm fighting those color limitations all the time. I'm trying to like, okay, how can I extract as much color as I possibly can from those eight colors? Oh, I'm making the palette, the whole palette, the game shift, for example, things like that. So when you have a limitation like that, I feel it's counterintuitive, but your job as an artist is try to fight it and push it as much as you can. That's how you get the most of those limitations, I feel.
That's very interesting. So correct me if I'm wrong, but your approach to pixel art is like you're trying to create, I guess, like as much realism or stand out or like push it as much as possible, but you're working within these constraints. So that would force you to come up with like creative gradient or shading solutions to make something look better, I guess. However, you also mentioned you're limited to like eight colors or something. So like from an art direction standpoint, like how do you come up with those rules at the beginning to say like eight colors or why eight colors?
A lot of people, they get like arbitrary limitations from retro consoles, like, oh, how do NES worked or the
Yeah,
Game
Atari
Boy?
only had two colors, so we're
Yeah,
gonna
when I'm going to do that. But I don't like that in general, because I think those limitations, they were very like the four colors of Game Boy, they were not chosen by an artist. They were chosen by like an engineer. They were like, oh, the wavelength of something is easier if you
Yeah,
did
it
this.
was bound by technology at the time.
Yeah. Nowadays, we're choosing that for artistic reasons. So we basically, so what I try to come up with when I'm trying to find limitation like that is like, what will be kind of cool, basically? What kind of limitation I can get that will usually do two things, right? Ideally, will prevent me of overscoping things. So if I have like just four colors, it's kind of easier, right? Because like, there's not much, like for tiles, for example, I can just, it's just four colors. Like whatever, if I scribble something, your mind will see something there. I don't need a lot of work. That's one thing. The second thing, like it won't constrain me too much to at the point that I just can't do stuff. Because if you limit yourself too much, sometimes like one color, oh, you cannot express yourself enough sometimes.
Yeah.
Actually, three things. And the third one, it needs to look interesting somehow and original, right? Like Neverway, this game that I'm doing, like with the eight colors, like has like this when you look at it, we're like, oh, okay, it's that weird game with the purple palette with something, right?
Gotcha. So it's like part of its like calling card that it makes it stand out.
Yeah. So if you can get something like that, like on Celeste was also like something that we could do. Actually, when I joined the project, we already had that resolution, and they asked me if I wanted to change it, but I think I just liked it. I was like, oh, this is very low resolution. This is cool. I started with a fixed color palette. Almost every single game I worked on is always like this. I say I will do a fixed color palette, and I will not change it. 2 months into the project, I'm like, fuck the color palette, let's do it, whatever. And we just I just give up on the color palette every single time. Neverway is the only one that I think I've been keeping that color palette because I ingrained it into the code of the games. I cannot
Right.
get rid of it
Well,
anymore.
everything is purple. You can't suddenly have like, I don't know, bright green or something.
Yeah, and also like I put like it, the way the game is coded, like I cannot put more colors in there basically. So yeah.
So, okay, so like besides the color palette and like the screen resolution, like what do you usually prepare before you even execute the game? Like from a art direction standpoint, like for TV show or a movie, you know, there's concept art, they like do a character rotation, they have like everybody's seen the rules of The Simpsons, how their eyes work and stuff. Like for a video game, is it very similar? Are there different things that you include?
Think depends a lot on the team. I've seen a lot of different things happening.
So, like, what's a must-have for you before you're like,
Yeah,
no, we have to go back?
for me, I need a mock-up. I need to make a mock-up of the game. That's the first thing. I
What do
do
you mean by
like
a
a
mock-up? Like a sample screenshot of what a scene can look like?
it's a fake screenshot. I just open my drawing software and I take a screenshot of the game, like a fake one. I just draw a scene for the game, like the whole, like complete thing. It won't be exactly what we will have in the end, but
Yeah.
it will work as a guide for everything else. So usually, like we have an idea, like we have a okay, this game will be a platformer about, I don't know, jumping on spikes, and then I draw the spikes and I see how it looks. I usually also do like I usually like to work like with a little big canvas, and I just draw like many variations of the protagonist or something right now. Usually, actually, I try to avoid the protagonist for the first drawing, but I try to draw like an enemy or something, and until I get a style in general.
How much of, like you also mentioned, you kind of figure the style as you go along too, right? But you try not to stray away too much from that original. So like starting a video game from scratch, you kind of wait till the idea is there, like, you know, it's platformer, spikes, whatever. Then you create a mock-up and then use that as the base to say, like, all right, this is kind of how it's gonna look and feel.
Yeah, I think it's a back and forth. Usually like we have an idea and
Yeah.
then we do a mock-up and then the idea changes a little bit to for the mo and keeps going. It changes a little bit. Earthblade changes a lot. It's been too long. That's not normal for a game to take this long. So if you look at the first mock-ups, it's like completely different game, like
Yeah.
another aesthetic and everything. But for smaller games like Celeste or Neverway right now, it's kind of then it's more like, okay, you see the first mock-up, you see the game right now, you see where this is going, coming from. It kind of makes sense in general.
So like, okay, so from I guess like a marketing business, whatever standpoint, like you're in charge of the art direction and the execution essentially. How much do you kind of like check out what else is out there competition wise, or like what the market is like leaning towards, like the indie game scene, to integrate into your art? Or are you just like, you're like, you know what, I'm the
No.
expert, I want to figure this out, because like, you know, an art style is very, very connected to the experience somebody has when they play the game. So like, you don't want to mess something up and like, I don't know, it doesn't get the right attention because you picked, maybe purple's not in when you come out with Neverway.
I think I know. I constantly look at things, even like on Twitter, or like ArtStation, everywhere. Everywhere I can consume, whatever art I can see, whatever games I get. I try to be very aware of everything I can, and I try to look at it. But I usually don't. Yeah, what I try to do, I try to use a lot of things as reference, but I try to not use the same thing. For example, it's very unlikely for me to see a screenshot of a game that someone made or something and say, "Oh, this is cool. I want something like this." But it's very common for me to see a random drawing that someone made, like a fan art someone did for another game, and say, "Oh, that's fan art. That's not pixel art. Would be cool if I adapted this to pixel art."
Interesting.
Something. So, or for example, I actually look a lot of fashion stuff. I look a lot of like fashion brands. They have like really cool like aesthetics and everything. Bands with like music videos. Music videos are great for getting like what people are listening and what they're like the aesthetics they're going for. I
So it's
usually
not like
don't.
you're doing like crazy intense research. It's more like you're consuming as much as you can and kind of
Yeah,
taking what's
yeah.
inspiring you. And I mean, that makes sense from like a subliminal standpoint. You're taking all this information and sorting it
Yeah.
out behind the scenes anyways.
Exactly. I don't want it kind of it's a thing that I kind of don't want to I don't want to because if I'm copying a game, games take a long time to make. So like at least 1 year or something like for the fast ones. So at the point a game is out, and if you start looking at this as reference, the point of your game is out, this is gone already, right? This is like the thing here is already done, and people are already like. So if you want to do something original and something interesting, you can't look at other games. You need to look at like other kinds of art. You need to look at music and like movies and anything that's kind of will be translated into games in 5 years.
Totally. That, I mean, that
Yeah.
makes sense for anything. It's so funny, like on games and like TV shows, even you can tell when something was just a copycat at the time, and then it comes out a couple of years later, and you're like, oh, well, this just looks like 10 other games now, and it's not interesting.
Yeah.
Versus like, the games that really stand out. I'm just curious, at what point did you start working on Celeste, and how did that happen?
Celeste was, I'm really bad at, with dates. I think it
Doesn't have
was
to.
2013 or something, and we but the thing was like me and Amora, we were finished working on Out There Somewhere, which is like this puzzle platform we made. Then we did another game. We made another game called Deep Dangers of Doom, which is so bad. It was supposed to be a completely different thing. The publisher we got us to make a free-to-play game with horrible monetization. It was terrible. But anyway, but that game had cool pixel art in it. And back then, I was friends with Chevy online, and Chevy was friends with Maddie. And they looked at the game, were like, "Oh, this is a cool aesthetic. We can go." And they called us for Towerfall. We worked on Towerfall then, and me and Mario were just like, "Oh yeah, it'd be like it was a freelance or something like, let's do it." And then it got like more intense, and we're like, "Oh, we're doing this." And eventually, we come here to Vancouver to visit everyone, team, and everything. It was really good, and then we kind of got used to working together, I guess. And from after Towerfall was released, was critically very successful and everything. And then Maddie and all started working on Celeste, and then I joined the team shortly after.
Wow. So it really was just like kind of a random online
Yeah,
connection.
or
That's
random
amazing.
online
So, but if you
connection.
weren't on Celeste, you would have been making video games anyways. It's not
Yeah,
like,
probably, yeah.
So,
Yeah.
like, okay. So, how have you hired other pixel artists as well when you're working on these games, or do you do it all?
Yeah, I hired usually not as usually for specific stuff. Deep Dungeons of Doom, my friend Danilo, which is from Joy Masher, which also does really cool stuff. He did some like the cutscene art, I have some art assistants for Earthblade.
So,
There's some other
'cause
pins.
my question is like, how do you find pixel artists who like meet the standard of what you want to do? And also like, 'cause like, there's not a traditional path to get into pixel art, or
Yeah.
even the pixel artists I know are just because like I follow them on Instagram or something like
Yeah.
that.
Yes, it's kind of the same. Like, I kind of have to see them online or on some game or have some personal connection for someone that knows someone. There's not really a lot. Yeah, but honestly, I don't actually hire a lot of. I hire usually for very specific things. It's usually because I really like the art of that person,
Yeah.
and I like, oh, I want that. Like, Neverway has Deceiver is helping me with some of the art of the items, like close up items. He's really good at doing like this very detailed thing. And I was like, oh, I always wanted to work with this guy. He's like such a good inspiration. Like, oh, you want to do it? So he's helping. Things like that help happens. But yeah, like for art assistant, it's kind of hard. For me, I think it's more like a me problem, and I'm not very good at like delegating tasks.
Gotcha.
And
Like,
yeah,
you just want
I'm
to
not
do your
used to
job.
it usually. I'm like, oh, I think I can do this. I'm like, I never know what I can do, what I should give to someone do, and then I don't know. I'm just bad at it, I think.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. Whatever. Because I was just wondering, is there like an online community of pixel artists that, like that everybody kind of is drawn to and people get hired from or whatnot? Because like, how do people get into pixel art other than just like, random, they enjoy it and we're playing around with it, like like you said, there's not
Yeah.
a course really.
Back then there was this community called Pixel Joint. Was like a forum and like a DeviantArt but for pixel arts, not like,
Yeah.
and everyone was so rude.
Oh no,
Yeah,
pixel artists are the rudest people, turns out.
no, they know they're fine in general, but there was like this very like strong like, oh, this is not real pixel art, you're using the paint bucket, stuff like that.
I see, I see.
Yeah.
I mean, I never got into pixel art, but I dabbled myself when I was much younger, and I remember people like, this is not true pixel art, but I think
Yeah.
I'm still part of like a pixel art
Oh well. Yeah, but
Facebook group.
I honestly, I think this is such a like a dated way to think. Like, I honestly don't care if something is true pixel art or not. I just care if it's good.
Yeah, if it looks good, right? Like, what the
Yeah, that I don't
hell?
think there's any merit in something being pixel art or not. It's just like, imagine like you make a painting, like a watercolor painting, and some like, this is not true watercolor. Use a bit of gouache. I'm
Hey,
like,
people are like that. People are like that. I know
yeah.
people who are like
Oh God.
that,
Yeah, because like, I don't care if you whatever you like, say it's mixed media then.
Yeah, right. It's an image, like you,
Yeah.
whatever, who cares?
Yeah.
I don't know,
Yeah, if the person like expressing themselves and they are like managing to convey the whatever they wanted to put on the paper, I think that's valid.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean you also put out a ton of resources too, so people have been eating those up and
Yeah, I think the thing, like for me, like when I started pixel art, it was kind of hard because I couldn't find any like, oh, this is the book that explains pixel art or whatever, or
Right.
and I remember when I was doing like sculpture or inking or something, there was like a lot of resources. You can find, there's like so many good books. And I always being a little like more like academic, I like books and stuff like that, and like resources like that. And I was like, well, I guess I have to make it. So I started looking at, there was a bunch of cool tutorials online, but they were very decentralized. So I tried to get a bunch from everything that I could find, and try to centralize as much as I could
Yeah.
into like a place that I could be easily like digested, let's say. And that's how I came up with like the tutorial format that I usually did, which is like a little square. It's a GIF, animated GIF with a bunch of information, and I was posting that online. And yeah, And I think people really like them in general.
Yeah, I mean, I have so many questions. I don't think we'll ask them all, but I'm just wondering, like, the difference between like pixel art as a still image and pixel art as an animation, because like the two are very, I would imagine, treated very, very differently, especially with an animation. Like sometimes, like one dot placed strategically can indicate like a whole emotion or something.
I think both come with advantages and disadvantages. Like if you're doing just a still image, you can, let's say, like bullshit your way a lot. You just like escape from so much with like you can just like because things are not moving, so you can just make everything like baked into the image. Like the light can be very baked and everything. But if you're doing like an animation, you have to, okay, what's behind this, what's behind there. But at the same time, especially at lower resolutions, some things would not be readable if they were not animated. It's kind of hard to explain, but at very low resolution, you don't have a lot of information to work with. So if things can move, you can say, oh, that's a face. Oh, that's an eye.
Or like a the thing that comes to my head is like a character laughing. It's just like pixels going up and down, but you like
Yeah, if
you
you
know they're
make
laughing.
exactly, but if you don't, if you're not animated, you want to make a character with a 2 pixel mouth laugh,
Yeah, I don't know.
it's impossible. You just can't do it, right?
Interesting. So in some ways it's almost like better to animate it rather than just have it as a still. Interesting. Cool. I guess I just have one more question. You know, I want to be cognizant of your time as well. Like,
No
so
worries.
you've been posting like your behind the scenes images on like Neverway and stuff, like and stuff. Is there a big advantage to like I guess like showing off what the development looks like before it actually comes out? And like is that like a community building thing? Is it just because you're interested in doing it? Like my immediate thought would be like, I don't want to show anybody because it's not ready yet, you know? Like it might change.
It's a mix. I like showing some stuff for a series of reasons. I don't like showing to sometimes because of other reasons, but mostly it's like, okay, when I'm showing something, I can get some feedback. Even if I'm not asking for feedback, like, oh, the proportions are wrong. It's not art feedback that I want. I want to see what people feel when I show them, when they see that. So sometimes some people say, oh, that character is so me, or this that character, oh, ew, that's gross, but I like it. Stuff like that, you know, like I want to see the reaction, because it's a long thing, like making a game. So it's like, so getting a glimpse of the reaction, I think it's cool.
And you mean like on Twitter or something, right? Like
On Twitter or like Discord sometimes. Discord I can show more stuff sometimes because it's one less people will see it, right? Yeah, but the thing is, the second thing is like, yeah, there is the thing about like showing a little bit of the game and people getting hyped up, because there's people that really like your stuff, they follow you, and whatever you show a little glimpse, they're interested in it and they want to see more. But honestly, I'm not that worried about changing or showing too much. Before I was a little, oh, this is too spoilery and everything. But honestly, a person that's kind of following the account or following the artist of a dev team around, they kind of don't really care that much, I guess.
Yeah, I was gonna ask because like I'm an animator, and the only people who follow me are
Yeah,
animators.
exactly.
Like I don't
Yeah.
have a general audience for
Exactly.
my
Me neither.
work.
I have a little bit.
So it's mostly like pixel artists or like artists that are following you?
I think so. I think I don't have like a very exact example, but I think it's mostly game developers, other game developers.
Gotcha.
So whatever I spoil to other game developers, which probably are not my target audience, let's
I would
say.
have thought they, I like, I, that's surprising to me. I would have thought that people who like the games you're playing would have followed you because of seeing behind the
No,
scenes
there
stuff.
definitely there is. Definitely there's a bunch of people that follow me, which are people that really like the game and they like the art and But they are more like enthusiasts. I don't think the very general audience of the games follows
Gotcha.
me,
Gotcha.
I
Interesting.
think. I mean, because the number, the amount of followers and things that I have is not nearly as much as I see people talking about it online.
Okay, that's fair.
Right?
I mean,
And
yeah, sure.
I think, I mean, so there, but there is a limit. For example, Neverway, I was posting as I was developing the core concept. I want to see the reaction and everything. Now that I know where the game is going more, I'm kind of not, I'm posting less and less because it's not as valuable for me right now to show off.
Okay.
Right? Because right now, what I need to do next is announce it properly. I need like a trailer, I need something to show. Okay, let's build up hype. And let's see what people say of the teaser, whatever. But because the game got into a state that, well, I guess that's what I'm doing right now. So I'm,
Interesting. So posting is more or less like testing the waters to see how people react.
That's how I see.
And then once you feel like confident about pursuing it full steam ahead, you just execute it.
Yeah, that's how I usually do it. And then I post again.
Yeah.
When it's kind of closer to launch or something to, and now it's like building up hype. But then I don't know how marketing works anymore.
Yes.
because nowadays without like call social media is chaos and everything's weird. But back then I would just, that was my plan. I would just try to build up hype and everything, things like
Yeah.
that.
So I guess you started off in graphic design. You dabbled in video games because it didn't exist in the country you're in.
Yeah.
That led to making some cool stuff, winning some awards, getting pulled into Celeste from a random online friend connection. And now
Yeah.
you're making 100,000 games a minute.
Yeah. Kind of like that. Yeah.
Is this it for you? Have you like found your thing? Like you
I
want to stay in
think
like video
so. I think
games and
so.
pixel art?
Yeah. I mean, since I was a kid, I always liked making games. I was like making RPG system, like tabletop RPG systems, when I was like 10, and that's the thing that I always did. Like, so that's, I think that's the thing I'll still be doing forever now.
Isn't it crazy how something you enjoyed when you were 10 years old become and you take it seriously becomes like your actual life?
No, yeah, exactly. Honestly, there's some character tropes and stuff that I came up when I was literally 10 years old that I still use today. I mean, it's just like, I mean, of course, like they're completely different right now. Like,
Well, yeah, you've
but
been
they are,
developing them in your mind since then too.
yeah. But I know they're from there. I know that the 10-year-old Pedro was the one that came up with this weird idea.
Wow. I mean, that's crazy. So like, you've already kind of shared what you're working on next. You're working on Neverway and Earthblade and Road to Ghoulcrest too, I
No,
guess.
Road to Ghoulcrest is Neverway. We changed the name.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if those two different things, because I saw
No,
that
no.
randomly and I haven't found any other information on it,
No,
which
sorry,
is
yeah.
like it's like a it's it seems to be like Stardew Valley meets like
Yeah.
death.
Yeah, I'd say kind of. I mean, it's not really a farming theme anymore. It's more like, reminds me a little bit more like Link to the Past with farming and crafting elements too. I
Okay.
don't know. It's a thing. We started as like a bunch of influences, but right now I think we're almost like doing our own thing. I don't even know what it is anymore.
Yeah. I guess one last, oh, I said one last question. One
No,
last
go
question
ahead.
for me is like, you've worked on so many different games. Each one is like completely not maybe along the same like you've done platformers or whatever. But like they all have different concepts. At what point does your team say this is the concept we're gonna run with? Like everybody's on board. Like how do you get to that decision when you're bringing in a whole bunch of different people, and like you want to make sure you're having like a concept that you can all run with and like develop, and there's not like a lot of like logic errors in how this would or would not work. Or like, I don't know, say somebody doesn't like farming and they're like, well, I don't want to go on a farming game. Like, you know what I mean?
I
So how do
think
you
that
come to a consensus to the point where you're like, now we're going to go forward with this and take it seriously?
I think it usually starts with someone. Someone is the lead always. We need someone to be the lead.
Like I have a really
So
good concept. I've thought about this. I've fleshed it out in my mind. Here it is. Would you like
yeah.
to?
Ideally, we have someone that's the lead, and that person also did a prototype. That's the ideal scenario. That's not what always happens, but that's the ideal scenario.
So somebody's already like gone in and coded something and it's got some basic gameplay.
Out there somewhere, for example, I did this tiny prototype and I show it to Amora. Was like, oh, look at this. I have a teleport gun working.
Yeah.
And it's a
This
little
is fun.
astronaut. Want to do it? And she was like, yeah, let's do it. So then we join and then we make the team showing this prototype almost.
Okay.
Same thing with Deep Dungeons of Doom. Towerfall, Maddie showed me a working prototype of a little game with like tiny archers and everything that. And that she did herself and everything, and I was like, okay, what you want to turn this into a real game? We're like, yeah, let's do it. Same thing with Celeste. Celeste was Noel and Maddie. They made a Pico 8 prototype. So there's always someone that kind of made something like an
Makes sense.
idea, like something, right? And Neverway was actually like Road to Gookrest back then. Was actually, oh, let's try this engine called Isa. She's the one programming she's making the engine for the game. And the game was actually an excuse to test the engine. So, and the thing kind of spiraled like completely out of control now, and it's a full game. But yeah, it started like that. So it started like, oh, let's test this thing. And then, okay, now this is making more sense. And every time we're like stepping, yeah, so this one is more collaborative. I think me and her, we're keep like changing
I
the
see,
game
I see.
itself, but it still comes from Isa's like base engine, let's say.
That makes a lot of sense. Like somebody's spearheading it, they have a prototype,
Yeah.
everybody kind of tests it out, and they're like, yeah, this makes sense. Let's jump on board and develop it. Okay, cool. Is there anything that we didn't chat about that you wanted to still chat about or share?
I don't know. I think that's all.
I guess maybe final thoughts for somebody who may be listening and wants to pursue a career like you have, where they, it doesn't have to be pixel art, but develop a unique style or gaming, or whatnot, like what to focus on.
One advice that I can give, which is, I don't know, it's kind of hard sometimes, but one thing that I kind of try to do is like I try to not have anything in the job, like because making games is hard. And it's weird, and it's like there's nothing should be like beneath you in the sense that, oh, I cannot learn how to do like this weird XML file that my programmer need, or I can't. Oh, GitHub, I don't know what it is. I don't want to touch it. Things like that. I think that's very common for artists, like to avoid learning more technical things
Totally.
because they are like, oh, this is not for me. I would advise against that and just try to learn the thing sometimes because
Yeah.
that will push you so much forward because it's such a multidisciplinary field games, right? Like and I think, well, it's fine if you don't want to, but just knowing that like if you become a more multidisciplinary person, you can have so much more originality and so much more quality on your art
Yeah.
just because you understand how the thing works and you have so much more power because you can do stuff with it.
I 100% agree. And even like thinking of your own path, like if you had just focused on pixel art, like you wouldn't have ended up where you were. You'd have
Definitely.
like an online portfolio just waiting for somebody else to like pick up your work versus like look at all the pixel art stuff you've done. Over you've made a whole career out of it just by having some coding knowledge. So I think that's yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's not beneath you. There is a tendency of artists to be like, I just want to focus on art and not think about anything else.
And I agree. I think that's a valid approach. I think that's but just knowing like if you want to go into games specifically,
Yeah.
having that like being like a more multidisciplinary person
Yeah.
helps a lot
Totally.
and gives
Makes
you
sense.
so much like independence.
Yeah. Well, I th like your journey attests to that, so.
Thanks so
All
much for
right, Pedro, well, th
listening.
thank you so much for sharing, your brain on the
Yeah.
chat. It's been a pleasure to listen, and so thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. It
Of
was
course.
great.
And if you're listening, you want to, follow Pedro's work or check out his stuff and his latest games or whatever, you can go to his website, which is saint11.org, or look him up on social media, and he's saint11 everywhere. And I'll post those links in the description of this chat. And thank you so much for listening. That's all for now. Okay, bye. The music for this podcast was composed by Willem Mendo and the graphics by Luhan Wang. I encourage you to look them up if you've enjoyed their work.